Yeah, I'm gonna post a couple of pictures of Pokemon on my Facebook page and dare these people to charge me. I'll put three of them, so I owe them $12,000. The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 401, recorded on October 5th, 2015. Welcome to the 401st edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 234th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Jonah Falcon.
And I am Scott Dirk.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry. No gaming flashback. And I just want to check. Yeah, there's no Paul. He's not hiding behind the bureau there. He's not... Last time, I thought Paul wasn't here. He was there. So...
It's a shame.
Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, this is the first, well, you see, he'll be back at some point, when he feels like it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, actually, you know, one of the news items might be a Paul news item, but I don't think so. Yeah, so, I hope our listeners are out there and tolerating just two people again. You know? So, I mean, it's hard enough to do the podcast with two people. I need three. So
yeah, three would be good.
Yeah, so that's up to you, Scott. You're the ones who have all the podcasting friends. Except we can't do everything about Civilization. See, that's the thing, or Minecraft for that matter. No, wait.
We play other games besides those. Chill.
Wait a minute. You know, I just realized now. I know that Dan is hooked on Minecraft too, and that you play Minecraft. So do you guys enter each other's worlds, or
we're on a server. We have a friend who has an account somewhere where they have a server computer just for our world. So Dan and I and several others go on there to play and build stuff
in the same land.
Yeah, in the same land. Yeah.
Now here's a question: do you have the monsters turned on or off?
On. Yeah, it's on.
Ooh,
hard.
Ooh, okay. So you're not just there to make pretty castles for people to look at.
No, you gotta think of safety. You gotta light stuff up and.
Yeah.
You know, keep the mobs from destroying stuff, yes.
That's why I'm really looking forward to Fortnite. It's basically a condensed version of that in which you have to build up a fortress and traps because at night the monsters come out and try to attack it. You know, and it's just based on that.
That sounds like a tower defense kind of thing. That could be fun,
sort of. Actually, you know, Sunset Overdrive does that, but the thing with Fortnite is it's an Unreal 4 engine game.
Mm.
And... have any Unreal 4 engine games come out yet? I don't think any games with the fourth engine have come out yet. It's all just been a bunch of tech demos.
I wouldn't know what uses the fourth Unreal engine, because that's mostly first person shooter games, which I haven't really been playing too much of. I don't know what engine like Grand Theft Auto uses, for instance.
It uses its own proprietary thing.
Oh, okay.
You see, here's the thing. I'm looking it up, and no. I mean, people have built the USS Enterprise. They've built Darth Vader. They've built a replica of Half-Life 2's City 17, but they haven't actually made a game yet.
What do you mean?
Like, Legend of Zelda Majora's Mask is gonna use the Unreal Engine 4, but it's not out yet.
So I thought I did actually. You know, now that you think of it, I think I did see... something about Minecraft in Unreal. What was in Unreal 4? Something.
No, Minecraft doesn't need Unreal Engine 4.
No, it was somebody. Damn, now I can't remember what game it was that somebody rendered something in Unreal 4.
Yeah, but see, that's just it. It's just rendering something in Unreal Engine 4. They're not actually releasing any games yet.
Okay.
This is sort of like the Source Engine. You know, everybody was talking about how great the Source Engine was going to be, but only two games were ever released with it. One of them was Vampires the Masquerade Bloodlines, and the other one was Half-Life 2 and its expansions. No one ever else used the Source Engine.
Hmm. That seems really odd, because I know people love the Half-Life gameplay and the mechanics and think they would be all over that.
Well, the physics were great in 2004. Now it's just dull.
Because
everybody does physics now.
I'm kind of surprised there aren't more... Half-Life clones that, like, try to manipulate the environment around you.
Oh, there are. But, you know, none of them involve Gordon Freeman. See, that's the problem. So here's a question for you. They released the Minecraft Story Mode Chapter 1. The first trailer was released for it. Have you seen it?
Yeah, I saw that. It looks very good. I am actually thinking about getting it when it comes out.
Okay.
At least I think the story will be good, at least.
Yeah. I'm wondering, is it going to be a game in which you're not only doing an adventure game, because it's died by Telltale, but also while you're doing the adventure game, you have to build a castle or something, or a house, or... You know, or is it strictly just making decisions as these Minecraft figures?
It's story mode, so I don't think you have to build anything. See, that's the thing about Minecraft is there's these adventure maps where you're not building anything. You're just exploring. Like this, there's this Labor Mansion where you're actually told not to break or place any blocks. You're just exploring this house and finding out the mystery of what happened to this family there. And you're not building anything again. You're just having an adventure.
So, yeah, you're doing a Nightmare on Elm Street, except without, in Minecraft. Yeah, you know what I'm surprised at? There haven't been any creepypasta Minecraft stories yet.
Creepypasta?
Creepypasta, yeah. I would imagine it's a natural for it. Because they have creepypastas for Pokemon, and they have creepypastas for Legend of Zelda. Why not a creepypasta for Minecraft? I'm pretty sure someone will do it, except they have to figure out a way to make Minecraft scary. I mean, aside from the Enderman and the Ender Dragon.
It can be scary. That's like I was just telling you, this Labor Mansion. I'm playing it and exploring this very dark mansion, and it is creepy because you're hearing sounds, and you have no idea where they're coming from, and you're kind of immersed in the first-person view. And you don't know where if any mobs are going to come out and get you because it's all dark. And, and that's the thing in Minecraft, when it's dark, mobs can spawn.
You know, I wonder, which came first, the Slenderman or the Enderman?
I'm not sure.
Because from what I understand, the Enderman only move when you're looking at them, or you're not looking. When you're looking at them, they move.
Endermen move whether you're looking at them or not.
Oh, someone moves when you're not looking at them.
That's probably the Endermen. Or actually, no. That's the angels. They move when you're not looking, like when you blink.
Oh, okay.
I don't know what you mean by creepypasta. I'm trying to Google it, and nothing's really making sense.
You know what? I'm not going to even get into it, but creepypasta is where stuff like Candle Cove came from. And also that My Little Pony Story Cupcake came from. You know, yeah. It's also where the Slender Man came from. Creepypasta. As a matter of fact, it's the one thing that originated from Creepypasta was the Slender Man. Entire mythos. Which, by the way, I don't find scary at all. It sounds like something a 12-year-old would make up.
Oh, okay. Here's the definition. In short, a creepypasta is a short story posted on the internet that is designed to unnerve and shock the reader. Okay.
Yeah, basically it's trying to be Jacob's Ladder. So, I mean, there are some that are just quite silly, and, you know, they always remind me of what makes something scary and what makes something not scary. And there are some stories which are very well done, and there are some stories not so well done. Candle Cove is my favorite of the group.
I liked the scary stories in that black and white book.
Oh, yeah, stories to... damn it. Stories, what's it called? Nighttime, bedtime stories,
yeah.
To keep you awake, or...
I think that's what it was, yeah. And
yeah, they remade it and made it completely not scary.
I thought it was scary. I mean, like the...
No. I mean the remake.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
The remake. Bedtime stories, I think? Or, yeah, I mean, so... The thing is that the what really sold that book was the really, really, really effective artwork.
Yes, very
and
good
the
art.
Artwork in the remake is so not scary. It doesn't. It robs the stories of their scariness.
That's a shame.
Yeah.
So
you have to.
Really good.
Yeah, you have to. Get the original book. And they're nerving more for adults now, too. I don't know any kids, you know. I wonder what would have happened if I had a book like that when I grew up. Because, everybody's affected by what they grew up watching. And I grew up watching stuff like Rocky Horror Picture Show. So that affected me in a weird way.
Yeah, I saw
and
that
Mystery
as well.
Science 3000, Mystery Science 3000, that affected me in a different way.
Saw that, too.
So, I mean, if I grew up See, I grew up with Roald Dahl, who has some creepy stuff of his own. If you ever read The Fantastic Mr. Fox, not the movie, the actual book, it's one creepy story. It really is. You know, especially Boggins, Boffin, I don't remember their names, but, you know. And also the sequel, Charlie and the Great Glass Elevator, super creepy. Because you deal with the vermicious knids.
That is weird.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I remember growing up with Tales in the Oligarch. What was that Nickelodeon show where they're telling stories by the fire? Like Tales from the Dark?
Are you talking about Amazing Stories?
No, it wasn't Amazing Stories. It was,
well, they are sitting around a campfire telling stories.
That's like the intro. I mean, Goosebumps? This is like their thing. They sit around. It's a bunch of kids sitting around a
it's
campfire.
It's not Goosebumps, is it? No.
No, not Goosebumps. A bunch of kids standing around by a fire.
And Nickelodeon.
The main kid has glasses and brown hair. Mm-hmm. And he's like, okay, it's your turn. And then he like throws some stuff in the fire, and this fire goes up, and then you see like the title of the story that they're gonna tell.
Are You Afraid of the Dark?
Yeah, that's it. I was trying to remember. I remember that one. I liked that series. Okay.
It's Midnight Dust.
Yeah, Midnight Dust. he was really into it too.
You know, some of the creepypasta stories involve Nickelodeon stuff, like. The one of who's the boss of who's SpongeBob's boss again? The Squid.
Squidward, yeah.
Yeah, they have one about him committing suicide. A lost episode of him committing suicide.
Oh wow!
You know that sort of thing.
sounds like somebody really hates Squidward.
No, but I'm just saying. No, the thing, the artwork that goes along with it. You know, the alleged cells that came with it.
Mm.
But everybody loves Candle Cove. That one's a great one. It's not necessarily scary, and it's not necessarily creepy, but it has this ring of truth, because it all revolves around people remembering, Gen Xers, remembering a children's show that they watched that was a local show from the 70s and 80s, and the thing is, back in the 70s and 80s, you know, all the independent stations had to make their own show, so they're really low budget.
Uh-huh.
So they talk about this weird show called Candle Cove, and it just gets more and more dark and creepy and all that. And I'm not going to spoil the ending for you. You'll just have to look up Candle Cove Creepypasta, and just because the entire story is written as if you're reading from a blog. I mean, not blog, a message board. You know, uh-huh. Like a Usenet message board. So yeah, it's actually a fun, scary read.
So I guess then, going by this, Labor's Mansion is the creepypasta that you're talking about, because it is kind of a short story. I mean,
what?
Depending on how long it takes you to solve the puzzles.
Here's the thing. It's a creepypasta. The specialty of a creepypasta is to take normal things and to twist it.
Well, a house is a normal thing.
Yeah, I know, but it's not it's something that's manufactured. It's something that people make up. It's not something that actually exists. I mean, the entire thing about the lost that blank Super Nintendo cartridge with just Majora scribbled on it with a Sharpie, which has a save game. There's a save game file called Ben, and when you go through the game, everybody's talking weird while you play the game, and asking you directly about stuff that the game shouldn't know. And then they find out that because the person deleted the Ben save file, and then they find out that the guy who owned the cartridge before you, named Ben, he drowned himself in suicide. So
that is really creepy, yeah.
Then you have the Pokemon Black story, which I was going to tell when Paul was around. I'm going to wait until he's back again before I tell that story, because it's a really interesting one, you know.
Built up the suspense, I see.
Yeah, so anyways. But I did have a different question of the week to think up of, and it wasn't, what was the scariest game you ever played? No, we're not. We already did Creepy. No. So I was thinking about writing an article about this, since I'm now writing for Game Watcher, for those of you out there who want to read GameWatcher.com. I do the news items, do some of the background work. I actually posted a mods article. The article I'm going to be writing about is what game, and see, the thing is that Game Watcher is primarily a PC site, and it would be, what board games would you most like to see on Steam? You know, because you have some board games, like you do have Elder Signs, right? And Settlers of Catan is all over the place.
There's this like 6-in-1 like puzzle or board game thing where I know I saw Mancala, chess, checkers, and
yeah,
all sorts of
but I'm talking about Euro board games, right? And I actually backed something on Kickstarter called Tabletopia, in which you can virtually play these board games in a virtual room. So you pick up the pieces and you move around. There's no AI, so you can't play against a computer. You're just playing by yourself, but it does automate some stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking, what is the board game that you'd most like to see on PC that isn't already on PC? And that is the question of the week.
Okay.
Well, I guess we can answer it right now. I'll answer first to give you. I think mine is sort of like a gimme, but Seven Wonders. For those who don't know, it's basically a card game in which you're drafting buildings for your civilization, and you'll have a wonder, like you'll either have like pyramids of Giza, or you'll have Stonehenge, or you'll have the Library of Alexandria, and each of them have special give you special things when you complete each stage of their wonders. And basically, you know, you're doing all these cards that give you resources and marketplaces, and blue cards are the public works and that sort of stuff. So I was thinking, you know, that would be a great game. And they're supposed to be coming out on iOS, but they keep on saying, it's going to come out, and it hasn't come out. And I know the reason why, too. To do that game, you really have to have really, really, really good AI. Because there are so many types of cards, and there's so many ways that you can win. You can win with science. You can win with warfare. You can win with just building blue cards and nothing else. You know, the game has to be adaptable. You know, and work towards work to win. Now, what I suspect might happen is that they'll just leave the AI mediocre, and they'll stress player versus player, because that's what they did with some games like Agricola and. As they did with Lords of Waterdeep, in which the game plays an okay game, but really you want to play with other people, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, Seven Wonders would be my pick for a PC game that would have, you know, that would be a great video game. My number two would be Lords of Waterdeep, because it's just so damn fun.
How that actually sounds good. I would like to play that.
What, Lords of Waterdeep?
Yeah, Lords of Waterdeep, yeah.
You play it?
I thought that was
you play
digital,
the board
actually.
Game? You play the game?
I haven't played it. I would like to. I haven't.
Well, no, it's on Lords of Waterdeep is on iOS.
Okay.
But I'm talking about getting onto PC. So.
Right.
So how about you? What board game? And don't say anything like, well, actually,
well,
you can't.
First of all, if you want Seven Wonders, you should just play Civ. But
No. Because there's only three ages. There's three rounds, and it's a much different game than Civilization.
Much, much quicker game.
Not only that, but it's also a different style of game. You're not researching techs. You're just getting resources to buy to build stuff. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay, so I guess I don't think I've seen Stratego on.
Oh yeah.
Is it?
Okay. All the classic Parker Brother games have been on.
Okay.
On.
They're all on there.
Yeah.
I know Axis and Allies is on there.
Yeah. I don't think they have by a major publisher something like Shadows Over Camelot or Werewolf or Mafia or any of those other of those trader games.
Mafia is on is definitely on computer in various forms. They have a website where you can do Mafia.
On the other hand, I think playing Mafia over computer is defeating the point entirely anyway.
Because
that's basically a game you have to be in the same room with the other people.
You know?
What fun is it to you need a cam.
A lot of fun.
You need a cam if you're playing Mafia on a computer. So that people can talk to each other.
What are you talking about?
And make random accusations and fistfights break out.
All the time. That's like on the website or on, I know I've seen it in StarCraft and then on a website that's called Town of Salem, and you're just typing in the, you know, accusations or whatever, and then people are, yeah, they have.
It doesn't feel the same doing that.
Well, I've never done it any other way, so.
You've never had a game of werewolf?
Nope.
With other people?
Not in real life, nope.
Ladies and gentlemen, we would like to take this moment to pray for Scott Dirk and hope that he actually gets to play a traitor game live with other people where he can look in their eyes and make accusations and make enemies for life. Because, you know, you need that in person.
I guess I'm in Florida, and Florida sucks, so whatever.
Just go to a meetup group. I'm pretty sure they have plenty of those there.
They don't have any.
So, yeah, I mean, so for those of you out there, what is the Euro game that's never been on PC before that you'd like to see on PC? There's Machikori and... Is it pronounced Machikori? There's also this game, the Castle of Mad Ludwig, in which you're building a very strange castle with tiles, and you have to plan all the rooms together. I think that would make a good game as well. So, anyways, we've talked your ears off about board games in a video game podcast. So, Scott, what have you been playing? And please don't say Civilization, and please don't say Minecraft.
I've been playing more of Oceanhorn. I've gotten farther in that.
Wait, you've been playing what?
The Oceanhorn. It's basically the Zelda Wind Waker clone, but it's...
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't know anything about that. You have to explain these things.
I explained this several episodes ago, but that's
fine. You have to bring it up again, because my memory is short.
Basically, it's a Zelda Wind Waker clone where you're sailing around to these various islands and you're trying to find your dad because he went off after this doomsday machine that was released, and you're trying to stop it, and it's called the Oceanhorn. And
okay.
What I like now is that I've found more islands and I've gotten high enough level to where I can actually have this pumpkin seed gun and shoot at the debris that's out in the ocean while I'm traveling between the various islands, which I think it just enhances it's just like, you know, when you're sailing to the island, it just enhances the travel to do something, to be interactive with the ocean. You're shooting at monsters and boxes and stuff, so you're not just sitting there waiting 5 minutes while you're transferring.
So, yeah, I was about to ask for Paul if it's as boring as Wind Waker is.
Oh, it's much better now. Now that I can shoot stuff, it's much better. I like the graphics, too. It's a lot better, I think. So, yeah, I'm saying it's better than Zelda. Yeah.
Okay. So, as for me, I've been playing a lot of NBA 2K16 on my PC. I got the PC version, because it's a review version, and I still don't know if I like it or not. So, the problem is that... Oh, God, it's such a microtransaction whore.
I hate that crap.
And the thing is that I'm beginning to discover that it doesn't shortchange you if you play it normally, but it's one huge long grind to make your... if you start off... if you don't pay the money. And also, I can't buy stuff like, I don't know, goggles for my player or different shoes or whatever, you know, because they cost more than it is they cost more than it sometimes takes to make to build up my skills. So yeah, it's not So on the other hand, you know, there are things that I like. There's also the opening sequences for the My Player mode were directed by Spike Lee. And, it's borderline Metal Gear Solid in the way it's just long cutscenes, one after the other, 10 minutes. It just, you know, I learned very quickly that the story was really uninteresting, and I just started skipping past them. And thank God it's not unskippable cutscenes like Mr. Kojima sometimes does with Metal Gear. So, yeah, once I got past the rookie season for my player, it opened up a lot, and it's a lot more enjoyable. So, yeah, but still, you know... I mean, they distorted building your skills to make it more for make you want to do the microtransactions, because If you could do individual skills, you wouldn't need them. You know, you just do the skills that you want. But now the skills that you want are lumped in with other skills that you don't need, and you have to do, if you really want to get your levels up quicker, you have to do microtransaction.
Yeah, that's what I don't like.
So, I mean, it's not unplayable. It's just annoying. But then again, you know, our Paul, may he rest in peace, he played a lot of, you know, iOS games that do a lot of that sort of stuff, like Dungeon Keeper, and he just trudges through them without dealing with it. So, you know, microtransactions, you know, they're sometimes very good, but most often, if you exploit them, they can really ruin the experience.
Yeah, I think more often than not, they get exploited, and they do paywalls, and they, oh, yeah.
No, well, at least this doesn't have paywalls. It's just grinding.
Yeah, the problem, grinding, I don't want to.
The real problem is that Electronic Arts has not made a good basketball game that would make people say, oh, you know, instead of doing this crap, I'll just do this instead. So there's no reason for them to change right now. So, anyways, that's what I've been mostly playing.
I'm not sure they've made any good games lately, but, you know, because they just keep making bad decisions that just bomb really bad, and it's like, wow, you thought SimCity was bad, yours, you know.
You know, they really screwed up with The Sims 4, and I'm waiting for them to fix it. And the problem is that it is a single-player only offline game. So they did that, but I don't know. So anyways, so that we prevent people from sleeping, listening to this podcast, we're going to move on to game news. Rumor, Caveman game teased by Ubisoft leaked as Far Cry Primal. And this comes to us from Game Watcher. Earlier today, Ubisoft was teasing a new game with a cave painting, then tweeted a cave painting of a mammoth being hunted, and also the main Ubisoft site. If you go to Ubisoft's site, you get the live stream of this large cave wall. It's sort of like the Cave of Forgotten Dreams. And they haven't said what it is. It's just one big tease. However, the Turkish branch of IGN actually spilled the beans on Twitter and revealed it to be Far Cry Primal. The post is gone, but Far Cry Primal seems to have an additional emphasis with melee combat a la Xenoclash. And if anybody's ever played Xenoclash, that is one strange game that is mostly a first-person melee game. Though the original cave painting depicted a primitive bow and arrow as well. So, yeah, Far Cry, for those who don't know, it's a long-running shooter, which emphasizes a lot of open world. You know, it's an open-world shooter. And you can do anything you want. You can hide in the trees. You can build stuff and all that stuff. So now, they're taking it to an unusual place. Taking it to the Stone, or at least the Ice Age. So, yeah, I mean, how do you feel about, not a shooter, but it's a first person, probably going to be a first person game that takes place with mammoths and cave bears and cave tigers?
So they're doing the same thing that Ark is doing.
I guess.
It sounds exactly like Ark.
Except, you know, Far Cry has its own different thing, though. One of the best things about Far Cry is that they have an excellent map editor. A really, really, really good map editor.
Mm-hmm.
That allows you to make some really professional-looking maps, you know, without having to be a programmer.
Oh, I know in Ark you can build things and you can hunt dinosaurs.
Well, that's just it. We're not hunting dinosaurs. We're hunting mammoths. You know, so at least we're in the Paleozoic era. In the Ice Age era. So you'll be hunting down mammoths. Now, do you know how mammoths were actually hunted by Neanderthals?
Yeah, I think they were, not pushed off the cliff, but they were like lured.
Yeah, they were sort of forced off the cliff.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, I guess you saw Walking with Cavemen, or, no, it wasn't Walking with Cavemen, it was Walking with no. Is it Walking with Beasts or Walking with Cave? No, it was Walking with Beasts that it appeared in. Yeah.
So yeah, sure I learned it in school, but yeah, somewhere.
Yeah. So, and you know, so I wonder when you're hunting down these mammoths, if that's the tactic you're gonna have to do with your cave buddies, you're gonna have to try and force it off a cliff.
That's a possibility, definitely. If they have gravity.
Yeah. So, anyways, so Are we looking forward to this? I'm sort of. I mean, I have not played Far Cry in a while. I mean, I heard that Far Cry 4 is really, really good, but I haven't played it. And you're not much of a Far Cry player, are you?
No, I have not played Far Cry, but I've seen it. Yeah. So I know, you know, what game series it is. But as far as running on with dinosaurs and mammoths, whatever, I'm not really interested.
Well, let's hope it's good somehow, because, you know, I actually backed the Stomping Land, which became a fraud. Oh, I also backed Mansion Lord, which turned out to be a major fraud.
Yeah, there's a lot of that happening lately.
No, the thing about Mansion Lord, I think we discussed this last week, is that... Did we discuss this?
I don't think so.
No. So Mansion Lord, let's discuss that, because we're sort of light on news this week. So Mansion Lord was a Kickstarter in which it was basically a JRPG sort of type of game, you know, with the 8-bit characters and all that, except you were living a murder mystery. But the one thing that I didn't quite understand, and I should have realized that meant that the game was bullshit, was that you would have JRPG-style combat in it, you know, for the accusations. And I'm thinking, what? But, you know, but the problem is that there's been stranger JRPGs, so it wasn't like I could, you know, I could say, oh, well, you know, that must... But what I should have noticed was that while there was a, you know, the developer was called Golgum Games, but they didn't list any of the people working at Golgum Games.
Oh, that is suspicious, that, yeah.
That should have tipped me right off. And, you know, actually spoke to whoever was doing that Kickstarter twice, just asking basic questions, which they could answer. But once the fund was made, they vanished, and they didn't come back.
Oh, that's terrible.
And, well, here's the thing, is that they found it was a guy named Jason Wong, and they had – the Golgum Games was registered in both Texas and California. So, yeah, he just got up and ran away. I didn't back it that much, fortunately. But, you know, now here's the thing, is that, you know, some of the stuff I backed would go silent for a long while and then wake up again, like Comics Writer, you know, which allows you to create your own, you know, format your own comic book, you know.
That sounds like what happened in the movie Big. Tom Hanks' idea about that.
Yeah, so, or Son of Nor, which was an RPG that sounded that sounded nice. But then again, sometimes you get Harry Knowles' thing, you know, in which Harry Knowles ran a Kickstarter for something, I think a show, and never did anything. And that is someone who is well known for Ain't It Cool News. So.
Oh, that's not good.
Yeah. Or the worst one was the Minecraft. Oh, I'm pretty sure you've heard about the Minecraft fraud, right? The Minecraft convention fraud that was supposed to be in New York.
Yeah, like the
and they just
selling fake tickets.
Yeah, and that's another. You know, what I would have done was I would have redone the Kickstarter and said I was real. You know, proved I was real, and what's it called? Said no, we're gonna have this thing done. And the thing is, you might as well have, because people already bought their plane tickets to New York. You know,
yeah.
So why not just have a get together? See if you can't make a makeshift LAN or something if you wanted to do that. So yeah, I mean, one thing about doing I think in that case though, it wasn't so much fraud as it was they didn't know what they were doing. Because, you know, a lot of conventions require a lot of hard work.
Yes.
And one of the things you really want in a convention also are people to meet, you know, like, say, one of the designers from Minecraft. It doesn't have to be Marcus Persson. It could just be some Joe Schmo who is one of the artwork people. So I think in that case, they just screwed up and decided to run away rather than face the music and say, hey, listen, we can't do this. Because people had bought their plane tickets. So it wasn't like they could refund people with their money. So yeah, getting back to Far Cry Primal, I hope it works. So anyway,
yeah.
So we're gonna move on to the next item. Go ahead.
Okay. Steam sections coming to major video game retailers this November from Game Watcher. Major video game brick-and-mortar retailers, Game UK, GameStop, EB Games, and Valve, have announced that stores will be including special Steam sections dedicated to selling Valve's upcoming hardware coming 10th November 2015. The hardware will include Steam Controller, Steam Link, and Steam Machines. The sections will, of course, also include a variety of Steam prepaid cards, which most stores already sell. According to Valve's Gabe Newell, GameStop, Game UK, and EB Games are leading retail destinations for pro gamers and early adopters. Creating a store within a store across North America and UK is a significant win for getting the first generation of Steam hardware products into gamers' hands. Valve had already partnered with the retailers to pre-order their Steam hardware with the offer of getting their devices a month before launch. The current pre-order offer is now including free copies of Rocket League and Portal 2. So yeah. This is actually a good thing, I think, for brick-and-mortar. It'll help them stay relevant. You know, they'll have hardware itself.
They already sold, you know, they already do digital at although they're not the first place that people go. But on the other hand, it is a place to go if you want to buy something digital, but you want to pay with cash.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just, you know, I'm not buying the Steam machine. I'm sorry, but I'm not. I don't need, you know, I don't know who really needs a Steam machine. So you're going to get a smaller Linux-powered computer for games that you can only get off Steam? Is that supposed to appeal to me? Oh, you can do it on the TV, too? Like, my Xbox One?
Well, I mean, there are people that buy consoles and people that buy Apple computers, and, you know, these are little contained machines that they don't want to have to fiddle with, and that's how some people are. You know, they don't have the time to figure out how these computers work. They just want something that works, and they
I don't know. Well, most of the PC gamers I know love fiddling with their computers and love knowing how it works and, you know, upgrading the card and doing this and that. You know, I just don't see who this is for. I mean, the only thing I can think of are people who are really loyal to Gabe Newell and Valve and hate consoles. They want their PC console.
I guess so. I mean, I don't know. I'm not going to be buying a Steam machine either, but I mean, it's interesting that they try. You know, it'll be nice to see maybe some computer games show up there, but I probably wouldn't bother either. You know, just get them online like usual.
You know what I still would like to get, which would be a better alternative to the Steam machine, and that is one of the NVIDIA Shield controllers, in which you can play your PC games through your controller. You know, at least that makes sense to me.
There's a lot of controllers that you could do that. I know Logitech. I have a Logitech controller that I can play PC games with. No.
It has a screen and it has its own. You know, but basically, it's like the Wii U tablet,
right,
except it's a controller.
Okay.
So yeah, I mean, I play Civilization on the controller while lying in my bed without having to have my computer on, you know, because it's linked and all that stuff, and you know, that sort of appeals to me, you know. Yeah. I mean, it's sort of because you're playing Civilization with a joystick, you know. It's kind of odd, but it's more like other games like Trine and stuff like that. I mean, that makes sense to me. Just having another computer that runs Linux for your computer. I mean, if I wanted to do that, I would get a TV out on my PC.
So yeah, I mean, that makes sense. I mean, to have I wish I had more games to play on a portable little device so I can lay in bed or sit on the couch or something. And
I mean, I guess you could, if it's small, I guess if you pick up the, if you wanted, you could take the little Steam machine with you and plug it in someone else's TV or something like that, you know, in which you're taking your own games there. That's the one thing. And you don't want to, you know, install your games on their computer, because you can do that. You can actually open up your Steam account, download your games that can be played when you're on your Steam account and not their Steam account, but that's such a hassle.
It does sound like a hassle.
Yeah. Anyways, we're going to continue with the portable motif and go with Sony. Climate is not healthy for a new PlayStation handheld, and this comes to us from Games Industry Biz. Sony Computer Entertainment Worldwide Studios President Shoei Yoshida told the audience at EGX last week, or actually 2 weeks ago, that the rise in smartphone use meant the company was unlikely to launch another handheld like the PlayStation Vita. He said, "People have mobile phones, so it's easy to play games on smartphones, and many games on smartphones are free or free to start," he told Eurogamer. "I myself am a huge fan of the PlayStation Vita, and we worked really hard on designing every aspect. Touch-based games are fun. There are many games with really good design, but having sticks and buttons makes things totally different. So I hope, like many of you, that this culture of playing portable games continues, but the climate is not healthy for now because of the huge dominance of mobile gaming." TGS last month, Sony promoted their Xperia range of cell phones and tablets in connection with the PS4, and more specifically demonstrating their prowess when it comes to interacting with the PS4. The devices can also be hooked up to a PS4 controller and used for remote play on the console, something that was trumpeted about the Vita on its debut. So I'll let you speak first before I start talking about bullshit.
I got some bullshit. It's called Trials in the Sky. Sony, you blew it. This game would have made me buy your stupid Vita or PSP. But no, you didn't advertise it. You didn't push out that you had this game. That's why I bought it on GOG.
Well, the problem with the Vita, and here's the thing. If that were true, then why did Nintendo successfully release the 3DS after having the DS, both of which were in the mobile game thing?
Speaking of which, I just bought a 3DS game today. But okay.
Which one?
Chronos Arc. It just came out on the 1st of October, and it's basically a Chrono Trigger-like game. It looks like Chrono Trigger, and it's a JRPG, and I'm going to be playing that as well, and I just bought it for like $10. So whatever, Sony. You're giving up. You're rolling over, saying that Nintendo's better, I guess.
They're not saying Nintendo's better. They're saying cell phones are better. But here's the thing with the Vita, okay? One, there were too many features that no one needed. I mean, did we really need a rear touch screen? Seriously? Was that worth, say, $15 adding to the price? And the battery was bad, and because the battery is very short-lived. And, when you have a mobile console... you want a long-lasting battery. I mean, when you play with a GBA or 3DS or anything, those things last for 10 hours, I think, or some ridiculous amount of time. They don't have to worry about charging or putting batteries in. I don't know what you do with them. Anyways, because I don't own a 3DS. Here's the biggest problem of all. See, Sony decided to treat the Vita like a full-fledged console that just happens to be small. So you have games like Uncharted, and here's the thing that they have to understand. If I want to play a console game, I'll play it on my console. What I want are mobile games. That's why stuff like Tetris did extremely well on the original Game Boy, because it's a mobile game. It's not a complicated game. It's just blocks falling.
Trials in the Sky was designed with a bit of a touchscreen interface in mind, because there's this point where you're doing the combat and your little guy could get like a limit break kind of thing, and you have to press this little red button. And it's a little bit wonky using my mouse to go over and click it instead of just touching it. And I know that was...
I have a laptop that has a touchscreen, but that's not the point. My point is that, when I play a mobile game, I want short games. I want, Tiny Towers. I want puzzle games, Even Pokemon and the JRPGs work well because they're very compact. You don't feel like you're playing a full... You're not playing Dragon Age on your 3DS. You're playing Final Fantasy VII, They're not terribly complicated in terms of controls or anything like that. You're just saying, okay, attack this with this. And they can be incredibly deep, like Final Fantasy Tactics. They can be really as deep as you want, but the thing is that they have to be a game that you would play on a mobile and wouldn't want to play on a full-fledged console. Could you imagine trying to you could play Final Fantasy Tactics, say, on the PlayStation 4, but it would be dull as hell unless you had more bells and whistles and more things to do.
I played Tactics on the PlayStation 3. It was fine.
My point is that, you know, they're just, yeah, but it was basically sort of like an XBLA slash PSN game that way. What I'm saying is that, you know, when I want to play a mobile game, I want to play a mobile game. I don't want to play, you know, I don't play Dragon Age. I don't want to play Mass Effect. I don't want to play Halo. I don't want to play, you know, I want to play a game that I play Settlers of Catan on my mobile, you know?
You want a game that you can just stop at the drop of a hat, put it in your pocket, and then pick it back up when you're
That's
ready.
That's a part of it. But there's also, you know, something just feels like, you know, like good when you're holding it in your hands and you're playing it. I would not feel the same if I was playing something really super complicated like Dragon Age. That would not be fun as a mobile game. It isn't that you can play and, you know, you can play for 15 minutes and stop. It's more like I don't have to engage my brain as much. You know? I mean, you do engage your brain in games like Advance Wars, but I'm just saying, you know, it's just simplicity design, you know? Now, I was going to get a 3DS to maybe play the new Pokemon game, but I'm not going to be playing Pokemon anytime soon for several reasons. But we're not there yet. That's not the news item yet. Instead, we're going to... Well, before we move on, any last words?
I was just going to say I like engaging my brain in all my games. So, but I do like any kind of game. Like, I like playing... Professor Layton, and you've definitely
See, but Professor Layton is a bunch of puzzle games. That's basically what it is. Is a puzzle game, just a series of them.
You're mentally engaged. I know, but trying to solve the puzzle.
But that's like, you know, what the game I played the most on my DS was Big Brain Academy.
Yeah, you're not like zoning out when you're playing.
No, I mean, but the thing is that those games are a bunch of mini games, you know, and they challenge your brain, but they're still just mini games.
Yeah.
And the problem I have with Professor Layton, by the way, is when I started playing the second one, it's like, oh, God, they're doing the same puzzles, sort of. You know, it's kind of hard to find new puzzles to do with it, you know? And the story wasn't doing it for me. I still haven't played that crossover with Ace Attorney, though.
Well, the prequels, this is probably the first and only time I'm going to say it, but the prequel trilogy is actually better than the mainline trilogy of Layton.
I like the first game. I mean, I saw what was going on with the town immediately.
Oh, yeah. It was very obvious.
For those who haven't played the game, I'm going to spoil it anyway. They're all robots.
Yeah. The prequel trilogy is much better. They have a very big overarching story between the three games, and there's a lot more, you know, you get a lot more into the characters.
Yeah. There was a PopCap game, well, two of them, actually. Which were sort of like a puzzle agent.
Mm-hmm.
And I really enjoyed the first puzzle agent because not only were the puzzles okay, you know, they weren't great, you know, but the story was so creepy, especially with the little gnomes, and they never really adequately explained what the gnomes were in the first game. And then they made the second game and explained it, and that's when it lost me. I liked it better when I didn't know what the gnomes were. The little living garden gnomes. You know, it was just so creepy and wonderful. It was sort of like playing a combination of Fargo and Twin Peaks. You know, even though the puzzles were amazingly easy, but it didn't matter to me because I was just enjoying the story so much. So yeah, for those of you out there, try Puzzle Agent. Even though the puzzles are easy, it's such nicely weird game that you don't see often. You know, if you like a Mystery Science 3000, you know, and love the Minnesota culture, don't you know? Try Puzzle Agent.
Yeah.
Anyways, moving on to the next item.
That is Lego Dimensions outsells Skylanders, Superchargers, and Disney Infinity 3.0 from Forbes. With LEGO Dimensions launched in all territories, we start to see how well it's selling compared to competitor products like Skylanders, Superchargers, and Disney Infinity. Figures from the ChartTrack that monitors sales of software through retail in UK and Ireland state that although LEGO Dimensions midweek launch only landed it a number 2 spot in the charts, it comfortably surpassed week one sales of both Disney Infinity 3.0 and Skylander Supercharged. It goes on to state that despite being the third Toys to Life game to launch this year, LEGO Dimensions launch is the third best launch week behind both Skylanders of Giants and Skylanders Sweep Force.
Swap Force.
While we need to wait on performance with other territories, this news from Chart Track is certainly positive for LEGO Dimensions. Also, we should note that assessing sales on the interactive toy-driven video games can be more complex due to both the physical and digital products.
Yeah, basically, when you want to buy an expansion, you have to go buy a toy. You have to actually go buy a little figurine.
It's interesting to see that high performance this year still doesn't surpass either Giants or Sweep Force for Skylanders. This could be in part because these titles had less competition in the market. Now, with three competing players in the space, it's likely we will see revenue divided between them. Of course, being the new game on the block and having its own block-building mechanics will certainly give LEGO Dimensions a boost by including a number of previously unavailable LEGO minifigures. It will also attract customers from the LEGO side of the business. In particular, collectors and avid fans may well buy the kits for the minifigures on their own.
You know, I'm trying to think of...
money for all of this.
What?
I don't have the money for all this. I'm just looking at
it. I was thinking for a moment of Will Farrakner's character, the man upstairs from the Lego movie, and him buying these little mini figs and not letting his kid, not letting Finn play with them.
If you want that figure, they have them for sale now at the Target, at any store probably. But I was in Target and I saw the Lego movie Legos there.
Like Benny's spaceship. Yeah. The thing about this is that LEGO Dimensions is also the weakest of the three games in one way, in that you have to keep on building and unbuilding stuff, putting it on your scanner and all that stuff. It's like a lot of unnecessary busy work. But here's the thing. They have vastly different characters. They have, they have The Simpsons, and they have Back to the Future, and they have Doctor Who, and they have, they have all these IPs that people really love that aren't Disney. And they certainly aren't Skylanders, so that's why. And the funny thing
gives it a big advantage,
and people want to play with The Simpsons. They want to play with Doc Brown, So yeah, it's the licensing that's getting it. It's just that the funky way that you use the minifigs in conjunction with the game, because you have to keep on building stuff every time you want to swap out. You have to do all this stuff, right? Which can become, I guess, tiring. But on the other hand, I guess if you could play with those minifigs in your own LEGO creations too, it'll be interesting to see if they change it,
It depends. Some things that people find grinding, boring, other people find engaging, or they just like to do. If I haven't seen this mechanic yet, so I'd have to play around with it. I don't know. But is it like you? I mean, like
you have to build. It's LEGO. You have to build.
Right.
They want you to build. Maybe that's the selling point. Maybe as a video game, it doesn't work very well, but for people who want to play LEGO, it works really well. We'll see.
That's why Minecraft works so damn well. You can build whatever.
Well, Minecraft is LEGO, just virtual.
Yeah. Minecraft is virtual LEGO, so that you don't have to worry about the blocks.
Would it be meta to have Minecraft minifigs being in LEGO Dimensions?
I'm pretty sure that won't be happening.
Well, the thing is, Microsoft owns Minecraft, and they wouldn't mind, licensing it out a few more things. I mean, they already talked to Telltale. Why not Warner Brothers? So yeah, and of course, since it's Warner Brothers, LEGO Dimensions will also have a bunch of superhero characters, I'm sure. DC superhero characters. I'm pretty sure they're going to wait on that, though. Maybe
they don't
get people nice and. Before they start spewing out the Justice League. Oh, wait, I just realized. Yeah, they have to time it with the movie. They're not going to release any Batman or Superman until that movie comes out, which is next year.
I hate that when they do stuff like that. They should
That's what they call synergy. Live with it. But on the other hand, you do have The Simpsons, and you have Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and you have the...
You don't need the movie to release it. You don't need the movie to release it. You just go, look, Superman, and people will freaking go buy it, because it's Superman, or Batman, or freaking Spider-Man, or freaking Wonder Woman. Just release Wonder Woman already. I want to play with Wonder Woman.
Oh, do you now?
Dirty. I mean, I've always liked that character, and I've never found a lot of comics or stories about her, you know, and it's like, well, you know, you got this character you haven't really explored. You know, God, how many times are we going to do the Superman origin? Can we just do a new character now? You know, just...
I just want to have the Ghostbusters and Scooby-Doo play together, which you can do in LEGO Dimensions.
See, that sounds just like a selling point to me. Cause, you know, if you're tired of the Disney universe and you don't relate to Skylanders, there you go. Here's all the rest of your childhood memories right over here in LEGO Dimensions.
Yeah, the only Legos that are have sets that you can't do are Star Wars, since Disney owns those and they're gonna reserve it for Infinity. Oh, you know, yeah, even though there are Lego Star Wars figures.
Yeah, there were Lego Star Wars.
There still are. I mean, for the physical, they have the Lego Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. You know, and those could probably be in the game as well.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
So it'll be interesting to see. Now, I haven't seen the gameplay. So it'll be interesting to see how they handle building. Because in the Traveler's Tales games, basically, you don't actually build. You just hold down a button and they build it for you, right?
There was this... They had the
MMO, which you could actually build stuff. So I'm hoping maybe they'll be able to let you do that. But then again, if you're Doc Brown and you're riding around with Egon from Ghostbusters, I guess it wouldn't be that bad.
I would want to be able to build my own ships and stuff. I remember seeing that Lego game that they came out with where you just say, oh, here's a house, and you just automatically build a house, and it was just, like, not really that fun. It's like,
you know what? Actually, there is a game. I don't know if you have an Xbox 360 or not, but there was a game that was exactly like that. It's Viva Piñata. It was Banjo-Kazooie Nuts and Bolts, in which you actually built stuff.
That sounds familiar. I think I've seen that, yeah.
You know, it wasn't Viva Pinata Nuts and Bolts. There was a different Viva Pinata spinoff. But yeah, Banjo-Kazooie Nuts and Bolts was a critically loved game, but no one bought it. I played it. It was kind of fun, but I couldn't afford it at the time. So, but actually, they actually included it on the new Rare Games Xbox One compilation. So it's included in that. So for those of you who want to play Nuts and Bolts, it's included in the... So you can play that and Battletoads and other Rare games. All except GoldenEye. For obvious reasons.
Yeah, so, Banjo-Kazooie, that's on... I'm getting N64 game.
Yeah, but Banjo-Kazooie Nuts and Bolts was strictly an Xbox game.
Right. There was another building game, like... Started with an A or something, but we were building a house or building a town.
You're thinking of Animal Crossing.
No, it's not Animal Crossing. No.
Oh, there are plenty of creepypastas about Animal Crossing, I think. Actually, Animal Crossing by itself is a creepypasta. It doesn't need a creepypasta. It's actually a very dark story.
I hate that mole man. If there's a creepypasta where the mole man's getting murdered, then I'd like to read that.
No, there's a creepypasta about Bart dying in one episode. There was a video released, which is a really clever, psychedelic version of the opening to The Simpsons that was really dark and disturbing, and it was just made now, like last week. And I was thinking, you know, this is going to inspire so many creepypastas, it's not funny. I'll have to find it for you and show it to you, and I'll post it in the gaming podcast notes. I swear, this thing will give you nightmares. This is even worse than the actual Simpsons opening, in which they had dead unicorns. Do you remember that opening that was actually like a minute and a half long? You know, it was much longer than normal, and it showed Simpsons merchandise and having kids, starving kids, having to working. And they had the dead unicorns and all that stuff, and it was like, they really, really a slap in the face at Fox, you know? It's like, but they allowed it. This one makes that one look like the Land of Chocolate, you know?
That intro was just weird, and they just did another one. They're always making fun of Fox to begin with.
Well, that's because they're a cash cow.
Yeah, there is, but it's like they were. There's like I was just watching an episode today. I think it's the latest one, where the Skinner was showing the movie, and the little the 20th Century Fox thing came up, and all the kids in the audience went boo.
Okay, so this it's called Weird Simpsons VHS because it has scan, you know, the VHS scan lines, you know, that often appear because of the tracking. So yeah, and like I said, this opening really reminds me of Candle Cove. It's just so. And I'm gonna send over the link to you, and you're gonna go, "What the?"
No, I think I saw that one. I do remember it. It was I forgot it was Bansky or something, or
what?
Who's the artist that did this intro? Are you talking about something else?
No, I think it's something else. No. You see, the one that was the dead unicorns and all that was the artist. That was the artist one. This was done as a quote-unquote tribute to the 25th anniversary of the first Simpsons episode. So, yeah, I just gave you the link. You don't have to watch. Actually, you know what? Everybody, I'm going to pause the podcast now just so that he can watch this.
You really find some disturbing stuff.
Oh, this is worse than disturbing. This is. You're going to think that maybe a serial killer did this one. Go ahead and watch it now. I just gave you the link.
Yeah, I've been watching it.
I'll watch it with you. it's just you know, starting when Bart is in the classroom, you know, that's when it really gets, you know, oh my god, what am I watching? But it also, you know, it has sort of a Mexican feel to it, sort of like a Day of the Dead thing. But yeah, I mean, it knows how, you know, with Lisa's and her sex, it knows how to get some dread, you know? And the fact that it's a VHS makes you think that someone, yeah, it's just like hell did this. And the fact that the couch is empty at the end gives it that, oh, the Simpsons are dead sort of thing, you know? So
yeah, I saw there was an SNES on top of the TV.
Now tell me that isn't creepy as hell.
That was very creepy and weird.
Especially since it's made to look like it was taped off of VHS. So you sort of have the ring going on there too. Like like after you watch this, your phone's going to ring and someone's going to say 7 days.
Oh, that's freaky. That's very mindfucky. I remember, man, there's some really good mindfuck videos out there that are just twisted. Where do you find this stuff? Seriously.
Actually, this one I just stumbled on. Hold on. I'm writing in the comments right now after you watch, your phone rings and someone whispers 7 days.
Now you're just trolling me.
Because it really is like that tape from the ring. Oh, someone had a good idea. He said, watch in 144p for maximum discomfort. For those of you who don't know, you can watch all of the things in various resolution. 144 is the worst. So, yeah, it'll even give you even worse of a feeling. So, yeah, I mean, this is sort of like the Squidward creepypasta I was talking about. And I sent you that link, too. The Squidward suicide creepypasta. Anyways, so yeah, this one will haunt your nightmares. They won't haunt you, they'll haunt your nightmares. Your nightmares will be afraid of it.
Shit.
So anyways, speaking of things that make you want to punch people, move on to the next item, which is me. Although, I will say it doesn't have a happy ending. Fan turns to crowd for Pokemon Party Settle... Damn it. Fan turns to the crowd for Pokemon PAX Party Settlement, and this comes to us from Games Industry Biz. The Pokemon company is asking $4,000 to settle a case against the organizer of a Pokemon-themed event at PAX Prime, despite the party being canceled 2 days before it was due to take place. Just people who actually listen to this episode know we've discussed this already. The annual unofficial Pokemon PAX kickoff party was created by Ramar Larkin-Jones, and 2015 was to be the fifth consecutive year. However, this year the Pokemon party noticed, which is strange because he never really hid this party, you know, and it was particularly interested in the event's flyer and the Facebook page, which featured copyright characters Pikachu and Cindy. The suit was filed in August, and the party was subsequently canceled. But that wasn't the end of the matter. Speaking to GeekWire, Larkin Jones admitted that he assumed that the suit to be a scare tactic to force the event to close. The assumption was on the basis that the Pokemon Company had not issued a cease and desist letter prior to doing so, or otherwise warned them in any way. Larkin Jones must now pay $4,000 to settle the matter, or face the costs that will arise should the matter escalate further. Totally didn't expect that, he wrote on the crowdfunding site GoFundMe, which he is using to raise money for the settlement. I canceled the party, refunded everyone $2. The $2 I charged to help cover the prizes I bought for the cosplay contest and the Smash Brothers tournament. By the way, he sold 30 tickets, so that's a whole whopping $60 there. Pokemon wants $4,000 I just don't have. I told them I would pay it over a year, and they denied that. They want it now within the next 45 days. I work in a cafe, and I literally don't have $4,000. I wish they would have just sent me a cease and desist, because I have no problem dropping the party, but I just don't have $4,000 to pay in the next 45 days. Larkin Jones has claimed that the party was about fandom, not profit. This was the first year that the event had an entry fee, and all the money raised was all used to buy prizes, giveaways, and decor. And I'll add, which isn't in the article, that it did not, what's it called, he actually still lost money buying all this stuff. So, I will add, there is a happy ending at the time of this podcast. There's at least $4,000 in the GoFundMe, and hopefully he'll get much more than that. So, I want you to unload now.
I can't believe the audacity they have. I mean, this is like the kind of crap that Anne Rice would pull. You know, like, oh, stop writing that fan, you know, fiction of that my stories. You're ripping me off, and like these companies don't seem to understand that this was good PR, and they just threw it away. They just picked it up, threw it in the trash. And then pissed all over it. Cause
I wonder if it's worth the $4,000, because I'm pretty sure the Pokemon Company makes more than $4,000.
Yeah. Well, what did they think was going on? Did they really think this kid was banking or something?
And here's the other thing. So he posted pictures of Pikachu and Cindy on a flyer and a Facebook page. Dear God, you know, maybe they're laying the groundwork to sue everyone who puts Pikachu on their Facebook page for $4,000.
That's just sad.
And this is why I say, people, if you don't like this, don't buy Pokemon. Don't buy a single Pokemon. I mean, it's going to be hard with parents and kids, but as adults, your teens and adults, you don't have to spend your $30 on these people. You know? They have a TV show. You know, they have movies. You know, what you can do is just simply stop buying their game. You know, and just have a anti-Pokemon party in which you don't celebrate Pokemon. That makes no sense, but you know what I mean.
Go play something else.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
There's literally millions of other games to play.
Unsurprisingly, these people nor their lawyers have been reachable for comment on this. Because, you know what? They can have the $4,000, but I hope he makes $12,000 from people supporting him.
Yeah, I'm glad he got some money to pay these bloodsuckers, apparently.
Hold on one second. Hello?
Hi, John. How are you?
Hi.
Are you awake? Are you up?
Yeah, I'm up, but I'm doing a podcast right now. Why don't I give you a buzz when it's over, okay? Oh, it'll be in like 15 minutes or so.
Or
I'll call you. You can't come by, though. No. But let me call you later, okay? Bye. Okay.
Alrighty. Thank you.
Anyways. So, I don't really know what more to add to that, except I'm glad he's not going to have to pay a penny and that other people helped him.
I had seen that article earlier on Facebook, so I'm glad to hear that he got the money to pay off these people.
I just wish these people didn't get the money. You know what I would do, just to be a prick, is raise the money, then refuse to give it to them.
Yeah, then it escalates, and it gets just worse.
If it escalates, you're going to say, okay, sue me for $100,000. Yeah, you'll be seeing that check soon. I work in a cafe. And then, what's it called? Go to the papers and just say to the papers what's going on here and force them to explain why they're doing this. Because he put Pikachu on Facebook and a poster, and he's a cafe owner. He's a cafe worker. He makes lattes, so therefore he's a dangerous criminal.
Yeah, you just want to see them apologize for the stupidity. But
of course, they're not going to apologize because that would mean that this person is not liable. And you also, the thing I want to ask is, why didn't you send a cease and desist letter if you were so concerned? If you really were so concerned about Pikachu's image, a cease and desist letter works just fine.
That's supposed to be the first step,
you decided to come out and just say, give us money. Which is basically what this is. This was just give us money because you're a cafe worker and you must make massive tips. I'm pretty sure these lawyers probably tip their cafe workers $100, so they probably think he makes that much in a day. He makes $4,000 in 45 days. That's probably what he thinks. I'm pretty sure that's what they think that the average working Joe does. Makes $4,000 in a month and a half. I wish I did.
I know, same here. Champ.
So, anyways, look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with the history news and our gaming history article. So if you enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments at our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast, or send your comments to fans at GamingPodcast.net. You can check out Scott at AlphaShard on Twitter, and me at Jonah Falcon on Twitter. Subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us some iTunes comments.
Okay. Happy gaming, everyone.
Yeah, I'm going to post a couple of pictures of Pokemon on my Facebook page and dare these people to charge me. I'll put three of them, so I owe them $12,000. We will see you next week, and feel free to write in and say what you want about them. Now, by the way, before we go, I must stress that, the Pokemon company is not Nintendo. Even though Nintendo's done shady stuff, legally, they're not the Pokemon company, and I've never heard of Pokemon ever doing this to someone who works in a cafe. Do you think they a 10-year-old, they say, give us $4,000. Anyways, we will see you next week.